Thursday was an open day. In the morning, after dressing, they gathered around 2716's little table again with the heap of guidebooks and some brochures gathered from the lobby. "How about Canada's Wonderland?" Mickey suggested, tossing a brochure atop the heap. "I haven't been to an amusement park since I was a little boy." Utsuna peered at it, then shook her head. "Amusement parks aren't my thing," she said. "You guys can go if you want to, and I'll just hang out here and read or something."
"Are you sure?" asked Mickey. "I wouldn't want to leave you alone with nothing to do all day, just because I..."
"Nah, it's okay," she assured him. "I just don't like the places, that's all. No reason why you guys shouldn't go and have a good time."
"I'll stay too," Dorothy said. "I'm too heavy for most of the rides."
"Well," said Kate, dubious, "if you guys are really sure you don't mind being left..."
"No, really," Utsuna urged. "Go on, have fun. I might go back to the Royal Ontario. There's a whole wing we didn't get to yesterday."
"That sounds good," said Dorothy. "If you don't mind, I'll go with you."
"Okay," agreed Utsuna. "Sounds like a plan. Okay with you three?"
"If you're really sure," said Mickey.
"Will you stop worrying? So I'm an old stick-in-the-mud who doesn't like roller coasters. That's not your fault."
She got up, tugged him up by the shoulders, and propelled him toward the door.
"Now get going. You too, Kate. Come on, Sayonji. You're going to have fun if I have to break your arms."
"No need for that, I'm sure," Sayonji observed dryly as he followed Mickey into the hall. Kate paused, gathering up her cloak and walking stick, and turned to Utsuna with a question in her eyes.
"I'm fine,"
Utsuna assured her one more time in a murmur. Kate looked back at her for a moment, then nodded and went with the boys.
"Phew," said Utsuna as the door closed. "I thought they'd never leave."
"Why don't you like amusement parks?" Dorothy asked suddenly as the pair of them walked down Bloor Street toward the Royal Ontario Museum.
"Hm?"
asked Utsuna, jolted out of a reverie by the robot's abrupt question.
I had a bad experience at one once. Long time ago. I suppose it's kind of silly of me to hold it against the park itself, really, but..."
She shrugged. "I don't really want to talk about it, if it's all the same to you."
Dorothy nodded equably. "Memory associations can be very tangled things," she said. "I have a similar aversion to vocal jazz."
Utsuna gave her a slightly odd look at that, but said nothing.
She was in a strange mood today. Not really depressed, but feeling rather as if she could be, if the wrong stimulus came along at the wrong time. It was a rather bleak, gray day, not rainy, but looking and feeling like it might, with a chilly wind that cut across the streets and made the tails of her overcoat flap. She didn't grudge the others their fun. She'd encourage them to go seek it sincerely enough, but she wished they hadn't had to leave her alone with her thoughts on a day like this all the same. Well, that wasn't really fair, she supposed. She had Dorothy with her, and there was something reassuring about the robot girl's presence, silent or not. In fact, her silence was part of what made her so easy to have around. She wouldn't talk unless she had something to say or ask, and she didn't ask very many questions. She didn't take offense if she was told, "I don't really want to talk about it." On days like this, Utsuna found that to be a very valuable trait. She looked sideways at her reflection in the windows of the Chapters bookstore at the corner of Bay and Bloor, and sighed. Dorothy reminded her of Corwin, and for some strange reason, Utsuna really wished Corwin were here right now. She didn't want to tell him what was bothering her. She just wanted to have him nearby, as though she felt his presence would dispel the gray, gloomy feeling that was settling around her like fog. She felt as if she were running down inside, like a spring within her somewhere hadn't been wound up. At the museum, Utsuna and Dorothy drifted apart. Having wandered the halls by herself for half an hour or so, Utsuna realized after reading the same exhibit card 3 times that she was even more distracted than she thought. She sighed and looked up at the actual item she was standing in front of. It was a display case full of all things, swords. In the gleaming blade of a falchion, she could see her own reflection looking glumly back at her, slightly distorted by the shape of the metal. There was something so oddly poetic about being reflected back on herself by the blade of a sword that she had to smile, and as she did, her reflection flickered for a moment, becoming the smiling wink of someone else entirely. She blinked, shaking her head. That was going to take some getting used to. Utena reread the card, actually read it this time, and then finished the rest of that part of the museum she'd missed the day before in considerably improved spirits, the bleak mood dispelled almost as mysteriously as it had come. When they met up again in the lobby of the museum, Dorothy expressed an interest in a pottery-making exhibition that was starting in 10 minutes in one of the galleries, so Utena walked back to the hotel by herself. No one else was back yet, not surprising, as it was only 3 p.m, so she kicked back with the old SF book Kate had recommended to her in one of the old bookshops on Queen Street. It was an eerily prescient tale of a future policed by telepathic cops, and Utena was starting to feel a little creeped out by it when the telephone rang. That struck her as rather odd. Who would call them up here? But she picked up the phone anyway, figuring it might be one of the expeditioners checking to see if she or Dorothy were back from the museum yet. "Hello?" she inquired. "Hi," said a familiar voice. "Utena? It's Corwin. How are you?" Utena smiled. "Fine," she said. "I'm great. I was just thinking about you a little while ago."
"Really?"
Her smile widened a little bit. She could almost hear him blushing. Thanks. "Listen, I was just calling because I was talking to Mom about next week, and she doesn't think it'd be such a good idea for me to teach you to drive there in Worcester."
Her face fell. "Aw," she said. "Shoot. I was looking forward to..."
"So," said Corwin, "how'd you like to come here instead?"
"Here? Where's here? New Avalon?"
"No, Mom's place on Tomodachi."
"Are you sure she wants me hanging around for a week? I mean, it was one thing staying at your dad's place. I'm Kate's roommate, but..."
"Yeah, it's no problem. She thinks..."
"Well, let me..." "Here," Corwin replied, and there was a bit of a rustling sound.
"Utena?" said another voice. "Still there?"
Hi."
Utena paused as she suddenly realized that, though the woman had been around for several days back during Christmas break, Utena had never really learned how to address Corwin's mother.
"Mrs. Ravenhair?" she went on, a bit lamely, as she realized, just as she was saying it, that Skuld wasn't married.
Skuld laughed. "Just Skuld is fine," she said. "Mrs. Ravenhair makes me feel like you're talking to somebody's mother."
"I am," said Utena.
This drew another longer laugh from the Norn of tomorrow.
"Touché," she said. "Call me Skuld anyway.
Listen, I think it's fine if Corwin shows you how to drive and all. I just think Worcester's a bad place to do it. If anything goes wrong, it'd help if someone in the car was at least a part-time resident of the planet you're on, you know?"
"Yeah, that makes sense," said Utena, who hadn't thought of that.
"Let's see. You've never been to Tomodachi before, have you?"
"No, ma'am."
"Oh, Allfather, stop that," said Skuld in a tone of amused exasperation. "Anyway, Tomodachi's a Japanese colony, but you can get by just fine with standard, and the roads are a lot saner than in Worcester. I'd be happy to put you up. I have a perfectly serviceable sofa I can exile Corwin to. Or you could stay with my sister and her brood if you don't mind that preteen street gang dynamic. Then again, you stayed at Griffin's for 2 weeks, so I can't imagine that bothers you."
"I can't imagine Aunt Belle's kids acting like a street gang," said Utena, laughing.
"You'd be surprised. Fatora's quite a little thug sometimes. Anyway, if you'd rather stay here, we can always turn the prophesied one out of his bunk."
"The what?"
"Oh, sorry. Old family joke. When Corwin was born, my sister Erd claimed that he was the fulfillment of some ancient prophecy or another. Even Belle doesn't have any idea what she was talking about, and Erd claims she doesn't remember saying it. We figure it was another one of her weird little jokes. She'd been hitting the sake pretty hard that day, more nervous than I was."
"Oh," said Utena, who was still trying to get used to the fact that her friend's mother was a bona fide Norse goddess.
"Anyway, if you want to come, we'd be happy to have you," Skuld told her. "My brother-in-law can show you a few things, too. He used to be the prime driver for the Nokomi Tech Motor Club back in his student days, and nowadays he's their faculty advisor."
"Thanks," said Utena. "That'd be great."
"Super. Work out the details with Corwin, and we'll make ready on this end," Skuld said. "Until then, enjoy the rest of your road trip."
"Thanks, I will. Bye."
That same shuffling noise sounded again, and Corwin was back on the line.
"So, what do you think?"
"Sounds like a plan to me," Utena told him. "We should be back in Worcester late Sunday night, so I guess I'll see you Monday."
"I could come to Toronto on Sunday."
"Thanks, but I wouldn't want to miss the ride back. The drive itself is half the fun on a road trip, you know?"
He chuckled. Yeah, I hear you, he said. Okay, then. I'll be there noonish on Monday.
Cool. It's a date, she said.
The lock on the door clicked and rattled, and then Dorothy came in.
Hold on. Dorothy just got back. You want to talk to her?
Sure, said Corwin. Take it easy, Utina. See you Monday.
Till then,
Utina said brightly. Then she offered the phone to Dorothy, explaining to her puzzled look, It's Corwin.
Ah, said Dorothy.
She accepted the phone.
Hello, she said into it.
Fine. All systems nominal.
Oh yes, quite well. I've had a most enjoyable time.
She gave him a recap of the week so far, and told him about her plans to go to Sneaky D's with Kate and Miki the following night, while Utina and Sayanji took in a hockey game.
Pardon?
No, I'm sure it's nothing like that.
Of course.
What do I have to worry about?
They may try, but I'm doubtful that a mere human would have the strength.
Yes.
All right.
I'll be careful.
Yes, of course I'll look out for Caitlin.
So will Miki. You don't think either of us would allow...
Yes.
All right.
A pause while Corwin said something fairly long-winded. Dorothy smiled slightly.
Yes. I'm having a lot of fun. My dreams have been most interesting as well. I'll tell you about them the next time I see you.
Oh, please tell Aunt Beldandy that Caitlin's formal dress was quite successful.
What?
To the symphony last night.
Yes.
He nearly swallowed his tongue.
Yes, you would have enjoyed it quite a bit.
Utina giggled, knowing full well what that part was about.
Very well.
Yes, Corwin, I am genuinely enjoying myself.
Really.
Really, really. This is a childish verbal game.
Yes, all right.
Goodbye, Corwin.
She turned and handed the phone back to Utina. She checked it, but the line was dead. Smiling, she put it back.
He's fussing? She asked.
He's fussing, Dorothy confirmed. He must be repeatedly assured that I'm not simply telling him I'm enjoying my vacation, because he hopes I am.
Well, at least he's not right, said Utina. There was a time when he would have been.
I know, said Dorothy. She sat down on the couch and gazed at Utina with her dark, dark eyes for a moment before continuing,
I owe this change, in large part, directly and indirectly as well, to you.
Thank you.
Utina smiled and bowed her head graciously.
My pleasure, Dorothy, she said.
At around 7:30, the amusement park contingent returned, laughing and boisterous, to find Utina stretched out on her bed watching TV and Dorothy sitting on the couch reading.
About time you got back, said Utina. I was about to give up on you and order dinner for myself.
In lieu of that, the lot of them selected a random, well, semi-random, restaurant out of one of the guidebooks and went to have themselves some good steaks. Kate, on the way to the subway, gave Utina one of her concerned looks, but Utina waved it off.
Relax, she said. I was in a little funk, but I snapped right out of it. Corwin called.
Oh? What's he up to?
His mom didn't think it'd be a good idea for him to teach me to drive in Worcester, so she invited me to Tomodachi next week to learn there instead.
Ah. Are you going?
Yeah, I think so. If you can do without me for a week, Utina added with a grin.
Kate weighed this seriously. Grin or no grin, the wry remark contained as its kernel a serious question, then nodded.
I'll manage, she said. I'll be pretty busy next week anyway. The IRCCAM symposium starts on the 14th.
Oh yeah, said Utina, nodding. Your big trip to Paris.
I wish we could both go to that, said Miki, dropping back a little from Dorothy and Sayanji to join in. It sounds very interesting.
Oh, it is, said Kate. I went last year, too.
Tell you what, next year, if they invite somebody from WPI, I'll let you go instead of me.
Well, I wouldn't want that, said Miki. I'm only your deputy. It wouldn't be right for me to take the opportunity away from you.
I'd rather we both went too, Kate replied, but Professor Hardinger wouldn't like it if both student directors disappeared for a week.
Still, I'll have gone twice. It's only fair to let you take it next time.
You do get to take somebody with you, right? Asked Utina. She cocked an eyebrow, slightly distracted, as she noticed that, a few paces ahead of them, Dorothy and Sionji were having a conversation. She couldn't guess what about, but Dorothy seemed to be describing what, judging by her hand gestures, had been quite a large explosion.
Well, said Caitlin, technically, IRCAM offers each delegate travel and accommodations for one guest, and a ticket to the closing concert. But everybody I know has classes that week. I'll have to scramble just to catch up when I get back.
That's not true this year, though, Mickey observed. I don't think Miss Jury is enrolling for any classes, and she might like to go see more of this world.
Utina gave him a skeptical look. Jury go on a trip to a foreign city with someone she barely knows?
No offense, Kate, I know you're bowling buddies and all, but you're practically a stranger to Jury, and she doesn't hang out with her friends, let alone strangers. I won't say she's hard to be friends with, Mickey, but I had an easier time getting to know Himemiya, you know.
You and Miss Jury have always had a somewhat adversarial relationship, Utina, Mickey pointed out as tactfully as possible. Not that it's really your fault or hers, but...
He shrugged.
I think if it were put to her correctly, she might consider it. If nothing else, it would give her some time by herself to think and reflect, not surrounded by the rest of us from the academy and the bustle of the institute and so forth. That is, he added with a deferent glance at Kate, if you wouldn't mind having her along.
Kate's cheeks went ever so faintly pink as she replied,
No, I don't think I mind that much.
Friday morning, in anticipation of a late night, they slept in, finally arising at a little after noon to shower, dress, and go in search of lunch. They spent the afternoon reading and watching television, conserving their energies for the evening to come. Finally, at around 6, Caitlin declared that it was time for them all to get ready for their evenings. In Utina and Sionji's cases, this consisted mainly of making sure they had their tickets and knew how to get to the Toronto Ice Arena. Given that the arena's domed roof could be seen from room 2715, that part wasn't very challenging. For the others, the preparation cycle was a little more involved. Mickey found himself dragged helplessly into 2716, no more able to resist Dorothy Wainwright's summons than he would have been able to resist being hit by a car, while Utina was summarily ejected into the hall by Caitlin.
So you don't spoil the surprise.
Utina stood in the hall next to the door of 2715, leaning back against the wall with one knee bent and her hands in her pockets. Sionji stood on the other side of the door, having unconsciously adopted a similar pose. She glanced across at him and giggled. All he needed was a trench coat and a cigarette, and he'd be a film noir detective under a street lamp, waiting for something to happen.
"Something funny, Tenjo?" he inquired, cocking an eyebrow.
"Not really," Utina replied, not caring to try and convey her impression.
"Wonder what they're doing to poor Mickey in there."
"Well, I don't hear any thumping, banging, or screaming," Sionji observed, "so it can't be too terrible."
He smiled. "Not that I expect he would object too strenuously to anything either of those girls did to him."
Utina chuckled. "I don't know about that. I mean, I know he's been seeing Azalin and all, but I think he'd still be too shocked to breathe if Kate came onto him."
"It would be a bit out of character," Sionji allowed.
A muffled exclamation came through the closed door. Utina and Sionji glanced at each other, but both declined to comment on it directly.
"I wonder if Dorothy's even interested in that kind of thing," mused Utina thoughtfully, tapping a fingertip against her chin.
"I don't know," said Sionji. "I imagine she'd tell you if you asked her."
Utina went a little pink. "That'd be a bit weird, don't you think?"
"Perhaps," Sionji replied.
The door to 2716 opened then, and Dorothy told them, "You can come in now. Caitlin has almost finished." Utina and Sionji remained where they were, staring, albeit for somewhat different reasons. Utina was, after all, merely flabbergasted by the bizarre getup Dorothy was wearing. When not wearing her school uniform, our Dorothy tended toward somber colors and styles anyway. Her favorite dress was the black one with the white ruffle that Sionji thought made her look like a maid.
and her others were mainly in dark shades of blue or bottle green. She had one black-trimmed red dress, which she saved for special occasions. She'd been wearing it on New Year's Eve, Utina remembered. Now everything she wore was black, but it was all so weird that the observers could only gape in amazement. The foundation of the outfit seemed to be a black front-laced corset, of all things, combined with a number of voluminous black silk petticoats, a black lace skirt, and a vestigial-sleeved half-length black velvet jacket to form an odd sort of dress. Her legs, visible from about the knee down, were clad in rather tattered black lace stockings and dilapidated-looking combat boots. She had on black silk gloves that came to above her elbows, and a black ribbon encircled her slender throat, fronted by a small round pearly bauble. Caitlin's silver teardrop earrings hung from her ears. The overwhelming blackness of the outfit, and the fact that it revealed rather more of her than her normal black dress, which covered all but her face and hands, threw the almost ethereal whiteness of her skin into vivid contrast. It was further heightened by the fact that she'd applied a bit of makeup to her face, enhancing the ever-present shadows under her eyes, and blackening her eyelids and lips. Her coal-black eyes made for a contrast within a contrast as she regarded them with an air of faintly amused ennui. "Well?" she inquired. "What?" Utina asked as she recovered her ability to speak. "Is that?" Dorothy blinked impassively at her. "When we were shopping on Queen Street," she said, "Caitlin decided it would be amusing if we assumed a gothic look for the evening's festivities." Dorothy glanced down at her attire, then added with the trace of a smile, "She claims I have a flair for the style." "You look like a 19th-century streetwalker." "I believe," said Dorothy blandly, "that's the general idea." Utina pried Sionji away from the wall and guided him into room 2716, where he sat down on the end of the bed and continued to gaze in blank amazement at the transformed Dorothy. "Come on, snap out of it," Utina muttered out of the side of her mouth as she sat down next to him. "Have I got to slap you?" Sionji blinked and seemed to shake himself. "Sorry," he said. "I was just taken aback, that's all." The bathroom door opened a moment later, and Caitlin emerged, giggling profusely. She, too, was dressed outlandishly, in a black velvet dress with slightly puffed sleeves, a slightly daring laced bodice, and a rustly skirt that reached the floor, fingerless black lace gloves, fingernails filed and painted black, and an assemblage of absurdly ornate costume jewelry. She'd powdered her face slightly and then made herself up similarly to Dorothy. And she wasn't wearing her glasses, which made for a somewhat startling change in her face in and of itself. Her hair was brushed back, its slight natural curl subdued by some chemical preparation, and temp-dyed into vivid streaks of scarlet and ebony. The overall effect was funereal, yet slightly wild and faintly eldritch at the same time. It struck Utina, who felt she ought to be in a position to know, that Kate looked a bit of a witch. Or at least she would have if she hadn't been caught up in all that rather unseemly giggling. "Okay, Mickey," she said when she'd recovered some control of herself. "You can come out now." "No," said Mickey Kaworu's voice from the bathroom. Come on, said Kate, her tone somewhere between cajoling and wheedling. You look great. Utina and Sionji are waiting. "Sionji's out there? Then I'm definitely not coming out." "Don't make me send Dorothy," said Kate, adopting a degree of mock severity. "Oh, all right," said Mickey in a long-suffering voice, and he emerged, slowly and with a look of pained resignation, from the bathroom. As one, Utina and Sionji sat up a little bit straighter, blinked again, and stared in slack-jawed silence. Mickey was almost unrecognizable. Had either of them met him on the street in his current incarnation, they probably wouldn't have known him. His blue hair, normally arranged in a slightly disordered, slightly overgrown beetle's bowl with sideburns, had been trimmed a bit, stiffened, and combed up into a dangerous-looking hedge of disorderly spikes, dimmed and streaked with black dye. His face, never exactly ruddy, had been made paler still by powder base, over which an artful hand had drawn eyeshadows that harkened back to ancient Egyptian paintings. With the black lipstick and the slight exaggeration of the hollows of his cheeks, he almost had the look of a tragedy mask. The transformation in his face was such that, for a moment, it stole the viewer's attention from the rest of him, but that was worth a look, too. Somehow the two girls had caused him to wear a black velvet smoking jacket over a white ruffle front shirt with absurdly big cuffs. An unbuttoned white ruffle front shirt, no less, bearing his slim, slightly defined chest and abdomen nearly to the navel, and outlandishly tight black velvet trousers. On his feet he wore black and white saddle shoes, not unlike Utena's own, with black laces instead of red. Costume rings like Caitlin's glittered on most of his fingers. His duelist's ring looked almost out of place among the faux gem opulence of its neighbors. Several strings of black mock pearls hung down his bared chest, one of them sporting a jeweled silver ankh. In the face of this astonishing creature, Utena Tenjo and Kyoichi Sayanji did the only thing it was possible for reasonable, rational human beings to do. They burst out laughing, almost convulsed with amusement, falling into each other's arms and howling with laughter until the tears flowed in unbroken streams down their steadily reddening faces. Under the pancake makeup, Miki flushed, though it was hard to tell except by the sudden glow of his ears. "Oh, fine," he said over their wails of hilarity. "It's all very well for you to laugh." He gestured with one indignant hand. The room's lights caught and glittered against the deep, glossy coat of blood-red polish on his neatly filed nails, causing the laughers to renew their efforts. Presently, as Miki stood with his hands on his velvet-clad hips and glared, Utena disengaged herself from Sayonji. Bereft of his support, the green-haired young man tumbled onto the floor and lay there, clutching at his sides and chortling, as Utena wiped at her eyes and struggled to say, "I'm sorry, Miki. It's just... that's so precious. The pants, and the shirt, and the makeup, and that jacket. It's too much." Unable to go on, she toppled onto her side on the bed and pounded at the mattress with one fist. Miki folded his arms across his ankh-bedecked chest and scowled. "I knew this was going to happen," he said. "Oh, come on, Miki," said Kate. "They're not laughing at you." "Yes, they are," said Dorothy. After a few more moments, Sayonji's arm appeared by the side of the bed. He grabbed hold of a fistful of the coverlet, hauled himself up, and managed to climb back into a sitting position. Utena sat up as well, still shuddering with occasional aftershocks, but mainly in control again. "I really am sorry, Mr. Kaworu," said Sayonji with exaggerated formality. Then he went on in a more natural tone. "Actually, you don't look bad for the genre. It just came as such a surprise." "Mm-hmm," said Utena, nodding. "You actually look really good for a goth." She grinned. "So is that going to be your stage outfit when you join the Art of Noise?"
"I think not," Miki said.
"Aw," said Utena, pouting. "You'd be a big hit, I bet. Women throwing their underwear at you and everything." Sayonji fell off the bed again.
"Why would I want that?" Miki inquired, ears darkening again.
Utena shook her head and smiled indulgently. "Dantrovian in training, and still the perfect innocent." She got up and put a hand on his shoulder, grinning once more. "That's so cute. I'd kiss you, but I don't want that stuff all over my face."
Now that you've seen it," said Kate, "you guys ought to get going. Game time's 7:30.
Utena observed her watch. "Yeah, you're right. Okay, have a good time, you guys, and be careful. You're going to have people all over you, all three of you."
"Don't worry, Mom," said Kate with a smile. "We'll be on our guard. Have fun at the game."
"Come on, Sayonji. On your feet."